I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. Food Share Toronto is a nonprofit organization at the forefront of helping communities tackle food insecurity and poverty. Their work in 2021 focused on finding long-term solutions to food insecurity. As the COVID-19 pandemic increased further need, the organization introduced new initiatives and approaches as well. Today, Renee D'Souza discusses Food Share Toronto's year in review, their accomplishments, what work still needs to be done, and plans for 2022.
My name is Renee D'Souza, and I'm the communications coordinator at Food Share. So I just want to start by defining food insecurity. So what it means is not having access to a sufficient quantity of affordable food. And I also just want to start by mentioning that food insecurity is really an issue of income and not actually an issue of food supply. A lot of the data we have on food insecurity is actually at the national level, but sources like Toronto's Foundation's Fallout Report do paint a dire picture of the state of our city amid the COVID-19 pandemic. So at the height of the pandemic, racialized parts of the city had 10 times higher COVID rates than the least racialized areas. Those with more money are able to travel in private vehicles, work from home in a lot of cases, and have their groceries delivered, luxuries that are not as available to those working low-wage frontline jobs. The report also confirmed that low-wage workers have been much more likely to lose a source of income over the course of the pandemic. So more specifically, women with young children, people of color, and young people were most likely to lose jobs due to COVID-19, whereas those in the top 25% of earners in the city making at least $36 an hour instead saw their hours boosted by 21%. And so what happens is when folks don't have enough money, of course, they're often forced to make really challenging decisions when it comes to food, often being forced to eat less in order to pay bills like rent, medical bills, or childcare expenses. And so that's why I say that food insecurity is an issue of income more than it is about food itself, because food is often one of those expenses that can be adjusted, whereas rent and prescription medications can't as much.
And are there particular, areas in the city or groups who have been like disproportionately affected by this throughout the pandemic?
Absolutely. So lower wage workers, women, people of color, folks with young children, students, of course, as well, are definitely the hardest hit by the pandemic.
Renee explains the status of food insecurity in the city during the pandemic and what groups were most affected.
So in terms of food insecurity, so pre-pandemic, food insecurity was always a huge crisis, of course, in this country and this city, with more than 4 million people experiencing food insecurity and Black and Indigenous communities affected most. So a study from folks at Proof Toronto revealed that Black households are 3.5 times more likely to be food insecure compared to white households, with 36.6% of Black children living in food insecure households. And so at the height of the pandemic, we saw 1 million more people experiencing food insecurity. So unfortunately, we know the folks that are hardest hit by the pandemic, like food insecurity, are Black folks, Indigenous folks, people of color, trans and queer folks, disabled folks, and folks who are marginalized in other ways. And so what we have here is really a crisis within a crisis within another crisis. So many layers of systemic issues occurring simultaneously. But one of the interesting things about the pandemic is that people who've never had to even consider what it felt like to be food insecure because they've not experienced poverty were actually feeling it a bit too. So things like supply chain issues, product shortages, and of course, folks who were laid off from their jobs as a result of the pandemic, many of those folks experienced food insecurity for the first time. And so, while food resources were more needed than ever, that's when we also saw volunteer-run services like food pantries closing. A lot of those offerings are run by volunteers who are seniors, and it just simply wasn't safe for them to continue to operate. And, this is just one example of why food banking is a Band-Aid solution that's failing to get to the root of food insecurity and poverty. And so to your question, I guess I would say, we've seen a lot of the same issues as in 2020. Of course, a lot of things have opened up this year and volunteers have been able to open things back up, especially during the summer. But we are proceeding with caution as we enter, another uncertain period of the pandemic. potentially leading, hopefully not, but potentially we're going to see some more closures. And I think overall, you know, it's not all that different from 2020. We saw a lot of uncertainty last year, but this year things have still been just as bad, with perhaps less shock and less attention being paid to the issue, kind of like what we had seen pre-pandemic. Food insecurity always existed. It still exists. It's worse now than it was, but it continues to be a huge problem in this city. One of the things that's really key about Food Share's approach is that we pretty boldly state that, you know, we're not solving food insecurity. It's key for us that to remember that no one individual or nonprofit or company can tackle this issue. And because we know food insecurity is an issue of income more than anything, I think our greatest challenge is really getting to the root causes of food insecurity, and enacting these changes at the policy level. So, you know, we need things like a universal basic income. We need affordable housing, a pharmacare program, these types of initiatives that will really get to the root cause of food insecurity, which is poverty more than anything. And because folks, you know, folks in a country as rich as Canada just should not be having to choose between paying their rent and putting food on the table. And so we're continuing to advocate for those types of changes at the policy level through, for example, our Right to Food campaign. So we recently launched this campaign where we're calling on the City of Toronto to develop a new Toronto food charter written by folks who actually experience food insecurity. And if I can, I'll just explain quickly what this Toronto food charter is, as many folks may not have heard about it. Over 20 years ago, Toronto City Council unanimously passed the Toronto Food Charter, stating that every Toronto resident should have access to an adequate supply of nutritious, affordable, and culturally appropriate food. Yet, of course, as we know, we still have this growing crisis of food insecurity in this city. You know, the government's response to the issue has been to throw millions of dollars into food charities and food banks ever since the first food bank opened during the recession in 1981. At the time, it was meant to be a short-term solution, but it has become the government's default response to the problem of food insecurity. And I think it's the main thing people think of when they think about how they can help. You know, let's donate some of our extra canned goods to the local food bank. But the Right to Food really doesn't look like waiting in a line for leftover canned goods and corporate waste. Really key point is that only a quarter of the people who report being food insecure are actually using food banks. So, you know, we know this isn't a long-term solution or an adequate response. And so that's why we're working on things like the Right to Food campaign, trying to really get at the root cause of food insecurity and calling on the city to really realize our right to food once and for all. And folks can add their voice to our campaign if they would like at foodshare.net/right to food.
While food banks are perceived as the best solution by levels of government to tackle food insecurity, Renee said that this is not completely accurate. One of FoodShare's initiatives in delivering fresh food to residents is the Right to Food campaign.
Getting into the food bank situation a little bit more. So the government funds food banks as a response to food insecurity, and food banks often are more so providing dry goods and canned goods, less of those fresh foods that you know, that folks need in their daily lives, meat and produce and dairy. And so I think a lot of these grassroots organizations in the absence of large scale and long-term government intervention are having to, you know, step in and serve the community, and mutual aid projects have come out of this. And so in the one sense, it's really terrible that we have this system that, you know, is forcing folks to show up for one another as a response to this crisis. But it's also really beautiful in a way. You see people just showing up for each other and you know, solving this problem together. And so a lot of these groups are calling for more government support to supply fresh food as opposed to the dry goods that we often see at food banks.
Looking ahead to 2022, Renee said that the organization plans to build back some of its programs disturbed by the pandemic.
So we have big hopes for 2022, and there's a lot we're looking forward to, but of course we're going to be cautious as the COVID-19 situation is evolving. But in 2022, we do plan to build back our bulk produce program, which was disrupted during the pandemic and which provides low-cost produce to schools, drop-ins, and agencies, so increasing that fresh food access. But there's a number of things we also want to work on. So in 2021, we had the opportunity to continue to work on a lot of our advocacy work. So we released a body liberation and fat acceptance statement, which shares that, you know, we believe that all bodies are worthy and have a right to exist as they are. And so, you know, we're aligning and evaluating our work to ensure that we affirm all bodies, which involves challenging any attitudes and assumptions about people's bodies and speaking out publicly against body shaming and body policing, which is something we actually did with our with a recent post where we rejected an award from Weight Watchers, and, you know, encouraging other supporters and funders of ours to address and challenge body shaming in their own work. And so in 2022, we also want to look at expanding that statement and to explore the intersections with disability justice. We also want to continue supporting communities in achieving their own self-determined goals around food justice through things like our supportive partnerships platform. And other community-based initiatives that we support. So, you know, like I said, at FoodShare, we don't ever say that we are solving this issue of food insecurity, but we try to support community-based initiatives as much as we can in an effort to achieve food sovereignty. And so one of the other things that we definitely want to continue supporting are the community farmers at places like Flemo Farm, for example. So Flemo Farm is a half-acre urban farm that runs through a hydro corridor in Flemington Park. This was a project that was at least 10 years in the making, and in 2021, they completed their first growing season at the farm, which was a huge accomplishment. You know, so much work went into that. The farm's a jointly run project between us at FoodShare, as well as the Flemington Health Center and the City of Toronto and others. And there are currently 6 community farmers who run micro farms at Flemo, and FoodShare staff support them there with resources, guidance, and training. And they had a market every Saturday throughout the summer where the farmers could sell their produce to the community, making this like a really hyper local farm initiative for Flemington Park. And so that's definitely another project that we're really excited to see continue growing in 2022, and we'll see how that evolves.
Mm-hmm. So I guess for now, how can Toronto residents get more informed about food insecurity and the work that FoodShare is doing?
So our default response tends to be, especially this time of year around holidays, tends to be bringing our leftovers and our dry canned goods to the food bank, and that tends to make us feel great, like we're helping. But as we've discussed, that's not really going to address the root cause of food insecurity. So I think one of the ways individuals could help is to write to and speak with their local politicians and government representatives about what they are doing to address the crisis of food insecurity in our city. So I think it's important to make sure the elected officials know that this is a political issue for you and it should be for them. And showing up to debates and town halls, like you mentioned, and asking politicians what they're doing about food insecurity in your community will be really key. To mention again that through our Right to Food campaign, we do have a really handy tool that will make it easy for you to just add your voice and send a letter to your city councilor calling to update the Toronto Food Charter and realize our right to food in Toronto. This year obviously has been very difficult for many people across the city and the country, but, you know, we're really proud of what we've been able to accomplish this year with to help those communities. So we were able to distribute more than 170,000 produce boxes at no cost to recipients as part of our COVID-19 emergency response effort. That's, of course, a really impactful number, nearly 2.8 million pounds of fresh produce delivered to folks most affected by the pandemic at no cost to them. But at the same time, you know, urgent food distribution is not really our main focus at FoodShare. We tend to focus on long-term solutions and food justice work.
That was Renee D'Souza of FoodShare Toronto. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.